Republicans line up to challenge Dan Burton again. Are some of them misguided? Richard Lugar displays his fundraising prowess. Will it propel him to re-election? Mike Pence raises even more. Dan Coats delivers the weekly GOP radio address, and an Indianapolis couple convinces the White House to change its military condolence policy. That plus the first of the Indy Super Bowl memorabilia and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 8, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, 2012 Republican primary opponents are lining up for Congressman Dan Burton in the 5th District in a repeat of what happened in 2010.
You were a deputy mayor.
Former U.S. Attorney Susan Brooks is close to launching a campaign for Congress in the 5th District.
Sure.
Former Congressman David McIntosh is putting together an exploratory committee to do the same thing. McIntosh lives in the Washington area, but maintains a voting residence in Indiana. It strikes a nerve with John McGough, a Republican who is already committed to challenging Burton.
You know, I'd like to ask David, where do his children go to school? Where does he go to church? Where's his doctor? Where does he get his paycheck from? It's not Indiana.
We caught up with McGough at the Ice House in Marion, where he was already on the campaign trail, lunching with Grant County Republican Chairman Jerry Shull. With McGough listening, I asked Shull which candidate he supports, and he dodged the question.
Sounds like you're noncommittal at this point.
Hey, I'm used to dancing.
So is Dan Burton, who will run in 2012 in a district that may be tougher to win than the one he now represents. But there is still the power of incumbency.
The more candidates, the more beneficial it is for the congressman.
Can Dan Burton hold on again? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, should the Burton opponents work together?
Well, I'm not sure how they would do that, but this district is dramatically different than the one Dan Burton has represented. With the reapportionment, the district got smaller geographically. What I would consider to be strong Burton precincts have disappeared, a lot of them. In the northern and far southern part of the district, they're no longer part of this district. And subsequently, I think this is a wide open affair because so much of this territory is brand new. It's like all of these candidates are starting over again with this new territory.
Including Dan Burton?
Including Dan Burton.
Okay. It's more Democratic, the district is, than it was before, but still not very, right?
Well, a lot of precincts in northern Marion County were added that are Democratic. Madison County was one of the counties that President Obama carried in 2008. It is more Democratic, and I just hope as many Republicans run as possible in the primary and Dan Burton wins renomination.
Because you'd rather run against Dan Burton than some of the newcomers.
Sure.
Okay. So, I mean, last time we saw four quality opponents for Dan Burton. Burton ended up winning by a percentage point.
Less than 30% of the vote.
Are we looking at a repeat?
I think what Mike's analysis indicates is that, you know, conventional wisdom would suggest that the more candidates get in, dilute the vote, it favors the incumbent. But I do think that a lot of people on the Republican side are looking at it the way Mike described it. It is more open than it was before, and Dan Burton eked it out against a large field last time. So, you know, it does have the feel of a toss-up this time around, unlike last time.
There were suggestions last time that it would be Dan Burton's last campaign. Now he's indicating that he will run for re-election. Does that hurt him in any way?
Well, I think the longer you serve, we have seen in any number of races at the state level, at the federal level, when you're getting up to, I think this would be a 16th term, you know, elected and served since 82, you have a vulnerability. We've seen it time and time again where candidates have tried different approaches to remind voters that this person has been in office, you know, as long as this car has been. And, you know, you'll see the old cars driven to different campaign sites and so forth. That was a technique that we saw here a few years back. And if you couple that with this notion, which many Republicans, including Republican county chairs, seem to have bought into, which is that he's out of touch with his constituency, with his district, that he's become more a creature of Washington than a creature of central Indiana, then that longevity, which normally could be a plus in most cases, could hurt him.
Party leaders can't enjoy seeing this, because when you look at the amount of resources that went into a primary in that district last time, the prospect of that happening again when the money could go to other candidates in other races.
Well, there's no question. I mean, you would just as soon have a candidate that you settled on and have it all go smooth and not have this kind of competition. But it's anytime you have reapportionment, you're going to have these kind of changes. And that's why you're going to see this in a lot of places. But with the lineup you're talking about, with General John McGough back in this thing, and he beat Burton in some of these Hamilton County precincts, like 93-13.
He thinks he could win if it was one-on-one.
Well, he should feel that way. I mean, this district got dramatically better for him in this time around. Susan Brooks, the former district attorney, is about to get in this race, I think. And she is a breath of fresh air and will be a tough competitor in this district. I think she's going to be good. And David McIntosh has proven that he can be a good campaigner, former congressman himself, candidate for governor. So, I mean, he'll bring a lot of resources to the table, a lot of money that have already been pledged to McIntosh before he even gets in.
There's only an overlap, I think, of one county. If you look at the district, the old second district, I guess it was,
that McIntosh
had represented up until 2000. Madison County is the only
gone
overlap.
He's been for 12 years,
and he left a bad
taste in a lot of people's mouths
with
his run for Congress. Is Dan Burton the favorite at this point?
Well, he is the incumbent. He needs to be considered the favorite. You know, he probably needs one more challenger in the race to feel a lot better about himself.
The Dick Lugar for Senate campaign announced this week that it raised $900,000 in the last quarter. It has $3.5 million in the bank. The folks at Dick Lugar campaign headquarters want to talk about money. They can't wait until the fundraising reports are completed.
We're certainly going to report that this is the second biggest fundraising quarter that Dick Lugar has ever had.
The biggest quarter for Lugar was the last one, the one when he picked up a serious challenge from GOP State Treasurer Richard Murdoch.
Your cash on hand number will be?
I'm not sure what the cash on hand is, Jim, to be honest with you.
Murdoch knows he's at a disadvantage. He says his fundraising this quarter will be around $450,000. The Lugar cash on hand advantage will be in the area of 10 to 1.
This race won't be won by money. Primaries are not about money. They are about organization and about enthusiasm. Odds are this will be a very low voter turnout primary. That's going to work to our advantage.
All right, one clarification. Murdoch says he's raised $450,000 so far this year. He's going to report about $300,000 in the bank, so a 10-to-1 deficit. Joe Donnelly, the Democrat, raised over $400,000. This quarter. Dan Parker, will this be the most expensive Senate race ever in Indiana?
Well, it might be the first Senate race that I remember in Indiana. When was the last time we had one?
Competitive race.
Competitive. No offense to my friend Brad, but you know, it is going to be very competitive. You know, obviously Murdoch needs to start showing some more strength. What's interesting about the Lugar numbers when the report comes out is to see how much of that 3.5 is actually primary money. You can't spend general election money in a primary. The second is when does the Eric Erickson endorsement of Murdoch really pay off? How long does that take? Because I think
he's
got probably...
The blogger from Red State.
He probably has, one more quarter of fundraising pace like this before people are going to say that it's not a serious challenge. But we feel very good about Joe Donnelly's number, and it's going to be a very competitive race.
But that's what Dick Lugar is trying to win this before he gets to the ballot box, right?
Well, sure. I mean, this is a good strategy for Senator Lugar. I mean, this is significant. And the reason it is, when you have $900,000 in this quarter, the second most, you think about how long Dick Lugard's political career is this second highest total he's ever had in a quarter of money raised. His first highest was last quarter.
Right.
So the two biggest ever. And what's significant about this is when these outside groups that Murdoch is counting on take a look at these numbers, those that have already committed to Murdoch may not give as much. And those that were looking at this race and wondering what to do may not give at all. And Dan's right. When the next quarter comes in, if it's bad like this one, then they're going to run away from
Richard
Murdoch.
The one thing about Lugar's number, if you compare it to other incumbent senators facing a similar situation, they are raising more than $1 million in a quarter. Dick Lugar hasn't gotten there yet. So even though he's showing strength against Murdoch, if you compare him to other incumbents like Olympia Snowe, who's in a similar situation, who's from Maine, which isn't as big a state as ours, she raised over $1 million in this quarter. So,
but they've had to in the past. He hasn't. So this is all kind of new again to him.
Well, Murdoch is saying that the money will come in when we get to the filing deadline and everybody realizes it's a head-to-head race. That's not till next February. Can he wait that long?
No, I'm not sure he can, because you're right. A lot of people read the tea leaves and look at these reports around the country very closely to decide whether they want to risk offending an incumbent with the stature of Dick Lugar. You don't want to wound that bear. You want to either kill him or run the other way. And so I think those totals are important. Now, I'm sure there are some Tea Party folks who are saying, well, look at Mark Rubio down in Florida. He wasn't anywhere further along than Murdoch is now, and he ended up upsetting Charlie Crist or driving Charlie Crist out of to another party, in fact. Same thing with Christine O'Donnell in Delaware and some of the others. They weren't this far along, but I think there is a fundamental difference in that those folks still had the element of surprise. People didn't sense that the Tea Party movement was as significant and could deliver. And if there's one thing you can say about Dick Lugar and his organization, no one's going to catch them by surprise. They know full well what they're up against, and I think that really has motivated them to put in the extra effort for fundraising.
He doesn't want this to be close.
I think that you're going to see possibly the most aggressive campaign that Senator Lugar has ever waged, if it gets that far. I think that the point that Mike and Dan make is very good. The internal desire goal for fundraising for the last quarter in the Murdoch campaign was $500,000. Mm-hmm. And they didn't get close to that. You know, $300,000 is a nice effort, but it's not $500,000. If they don't have a good quarter, then they are going to have a real struggle. And then Lugar won't have to unleash that campaign, but he's ready to do it.
The problem for Murdoch on this argument is it should be the easiest quarter you have. Your first or second one is where you get the low-hanging fruit. That's where you get all the money you know you're going to get. And then the trick is to sustain that money over time so you can get to the dollars you need. But when you start this poorly, it doesn't set well for a lot of people.
What was interesting in the Erickson endorsement was he mentioned some internal Republican polling. Murdoch really needs to have numbers public that shows that this is a race for him to really catch fire and start raising money. Until he can prove to donors that he's in the race, it's going to be tough.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, will money be the biggest factor in the Senate race? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only if the candidates raise, if one of the candidates raises more than Senator Lugar. Last week's question was, is major moves a success? 78% said yes, 12% said no, 10% said, ask me in 70 years. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Now to the fundraising numbers in the race for governor. Mike Pence is the leader there. The Republican congressman raised over $1.6 million, most of it in the last 2 months of the quarter. He has a 2-to-1 advantage over Democrat John Gregg, but Republican Jim Wallace came close to $1 million. John Ketzenberger, what's the story behind those numbers?
Well, the story is that you expected to have the success that Mike Pence was going to have. John Gregg's numbers aren't great, but they're not bad. That's a good start for that. And Jim Wallace, you look at that at $1 million and you think, wow, that's a terrific quarter, until you realize he lent himself that $1 million. And so he's going to spend a lot of money, and he's going to make an attempt to eat into the Mike Pence base. But he's going to do it on his own dime, and unless, you know, we're talking about fundraising for a challenge, unless he gets some help, that's going to be mighty expensive, and I can't imagine he'd go much further than that.
Well, at his announcement, Jim Wallace said that he wouldn't self-finance this campaign. Now he's saying that he needs to be invested in it.
Just priming the pump, maybe, you know, with $1 million.
Pretty good prime.
Yeah, that's pretty. Clearly, I mean, he has the wherewithal to, as we've seen from these numbers, to make a dent. But you have to wonder if even if he put it all, you know, on the table for this race, if he could come close to knocking off Mike Pence because of the name ID that Mike Pence has, because of the organization that he's built. Mike Pence's donor base, if you look at it closely, it's, for better or for worse, it's not just Indiana. I mean, this is somebody who draws from people and organizations around the country. And that's, I think, largely because of the role he played when he was number three ranking person in the House Republican caucus. He probably has a lot of chits outstanding that he can call in.
Well, Mike Pence raised $20 million.
$20 million is a big number. I mean, the $33 million that was spent in the record amount between Mitch Daniels and Joe Kernan is still a huge number. And if they get anywhere near that, I'll be impressed. But they got a long way to go to get there. But $1.6 million is a great start, 1,700 donors for him. And I thought the 770 or 717 for John Gregg was an impressive number for such a short period of time. Both of those guys have the ability, but the trick, again, I keep saying this, but it's going to be the ability to sustain that over a period of time where you get to those $14 million, $15, $16 million numbers. Right. That is hard to do. And on the Wallace number, $1 million sounds like a lot of money to give to lend your own campaign, and it is. Right. Would be for any of us, I can tell you that.
I wouldn't.
But the fact of the matter is,
it doesn't get you very far.
It doesn't get you much statewide. Right. So if you're going to do that, you got to keep doing it and doing it and doing it.
Does the Pence number scare you?
No, the John Gregg numbers excite me. I mean, he hasn't been involved in politics in 10 years. He hasn't spent 10 years in Washington, D.C., and he's not a millionaire. So his number, 97% of the money comes from Indiana, and this is a great start for him, and we look forward to it.
There are only 10 governor's races up this year in 2012.
Right.
And so both the RGA, the Republican Governor's Association, and the DGA will be involved here.
Right.
The good news for the Republicans is in the first 6 months, the Republicans raised $22 million, the RGA raised $11 million. So the RGA will be in here in a big way.
Right.
For Mike Pence.
And right now, by one ranking, this is the seventh best race in the country. John Gregg needs it to move up on that list. Right?
Well, this is a great start for him to move that race up.
Yeah. Indiana Senator Dan Coats this week delivered the GOP weekly radio address. The message is also available on YouTube, where he suggested that the example set by state government here in Indiana is one to follow.
The spend less, borrow less, and tax less model in Indiana has resulted in balanced budgets, job creation, and a AAA credit rating.
Josh Juanes, is it? I mean, can you relate what happened in Indiana to what's going on in the federal government?
I'm not sure that the comparison necessarily is apt, because it would have been hard, if not impossible, for Indiana to balance its budget had it not had money coming from the federal government in the form of stimulus dollars and other support. I mean, and don't forget, Indiana's already in the hole, as we've talked about many times before, say $2 billion worth on the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, and there were a lot of conservative Republicans saying, federal government, forgive our debt, you know. So it's, you can't just say that Indiana on its own got dug out of this hole.
Meantime, it's interesting, Coates getting the spotlight here as the debt ceiling talks go on. He also made a floor speech this week. It seems to me he's got a higher profile now than maybe his predecessor, Evan Bayh, had, and a higher profile than what Dan Coats had in his last incarnation.
Well, I'll absolutely agree with the last point that you make, that his first tenure in the Senate was not a high-key position and high-key tenure. I think that, you know, they're positioning him for that. I think they do see the principles that were followed in Indiana as being applicable to the federal government. And, we're at the point, a critical mass point, with the debt ceiling discussion at the federal level. And those are the kinds of things, you know, compromise is not the dirty word that it's made out to be. Those are the kinds of things that are going to happen in order for this crisis to be averted.
What was your reaction to that message?
Well, I forgive Dan Coats for not knowing what happened in Indiana because he didn't live here. The budget was balanced with stimulus money, and we did raise taxes. We raised taxes in 2008 with a sales tax increase, and then we proceeded to cut education funding that we took off the property tax. So your property taxes may have gone down, your sales tax went up, and education funding went down. So he just doesn't know what he's talking about because he's lived too long in North Carolina.
Wow. Was this a good week for Dan Coats?
Does he sound whiny to you? I don't know.
He lost.
Coach beat him like a borrowed mule. he's still crying about it. Look, Dan Coats delivered.
Does he still have a house here?
Dan Coats delivered, Carmel, by the way.
Yeah.
He delivered the right message. And John's right. The principles are the same. And Mitch Daniels managed state government spending better than probably anybody ever
has. It's tough to relate
has.
One to the other, though. It's a
no,
very different
really.
Example.
The principles are the same. Less spending, less regulation, and to keep that AAA bond rate or AAA credit rating here is phenomenal. I mean, it's never been done before.
But the vulnerability with this message of tax less, spend less, borrow less, is, and we'll see Democrats trying to position Republicans also as thoughtless. When it comes to issues such as Medicaid and Medicare and Social
all
Security.
All they've got is to scare people. That's all they've got.
Moving on. President Obama changed a White House policy this week. He will now send letters of condolence to all families who lost a loved one in war, including those who committed suicide. Indianapolis native Chance Kiesling was one of those soldiers. He died in Iraq in 2009. He was serving his second tour there when he took his own life. While he received full military honors and a military funeral, his parents did not receive a letter from the president thanking them for their son's service to his nation. Greg and Janet Kiesling thought that was wrong, and for the past 2 years urged the president, the military, and their representatives in Washington to change the policy. Their persistence paid off.
This is what we've been fighting for them to recognize that this is an illness, and these soldiers are not weak.
What this is going to do is just send a powerful signal through the military ranks that suicide prevention and mental health is not a sign of weakness.
Mike McDaniel, is that policy change overdue?
Yes, and the Obama administration did the right thing by changing it. And this was long overdue. There were like 160 deaths of active military in 2009. Those families had sacrifices like a lot of families have, unfortunately, and they ought to be recognized. And I think the president and his people made the right decision on this one.
Generals who considered suicide to be weakness have prevented this policy change in the past. Is society evolving?
Well, I think our understanding of mental illness is changing. And, you know, we're talking about somebody from Indianapolis that was on a second tour of duty. The wear and tear on the military is tremendous. It was the right move. The president deserves credit and also deserves credit for investing in treatment for soldiers coming back home that have trauma, that need to have attention given to them.
It's just great to see that the Kieslings were involved and persistent, and that people can still have an effect in a profound way, and I congratulate them for that.
Yeah, this is a policy that will not be retroactive, so therefore they have they're not entitled to a letter at this point. They expect they'll get one. I expect they will, too.
Oh, yeah, surely what they did is commendable, and I think nothing will make up for their loss. But to know that they had this impact in terms of changing longstanding policy and it will benefit a lot of other families in the future, that's got to make them feel good.
Finally, you can buy something in Indianapolis this week that isn't available anywhere else in the world. For the first time, Super Bowl 2012 merchandise hit store shelves at the Colts Pro Shop at Lucas Oil Stadium. It bears the city name, the official logo, and comes in dozens of items from t-shirts to glassware. And every month from now until the ball game, new merchandise will be released.
This is the first merchandise with the Super Bowl logo on it. There's only three places in the world you can get it right now, and that's here, Colts Pro Shop in Circle Center Mall, and at ColtsProShop.com.
Nowhere else.
Nowhere else.
That's Dave Morkanek of Main Gate Merchandise, Dan Parker. To what degree will those items become collector's items?
I hope they are not, because I hope there's a game. I just want a game. I want it for the city. I want it for for this big football fan right here.
Okay. Mike McDaniel, I heard you were out buying some of this stuff.
I bought. Now that you've given up the surprise I had for my father. Oh, thank you very much for doing that. But look, Indianapolis is going to be the best host this game's ever had.
You were buying it as an investment?
No. We're going to be the best host this game's ever had. And it's very exciting, and I encourage everybody to go down and get some of this stuff.
His dad's going to be well attired. Thank you. Let's say that.
Are you going to pull something out of your pocket
this
week?
Rat. Hat's out in the trunk.
I think they need to go to dinner with you tonight, don't you?
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.